part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part.
Fanboy.com. Hey, this is Christian Horn, and I am just recording this introduction to let you know that this episode was recorded on the floor of this year's Long Beach Comic Con. I and my friend David Schrader, who was on the Ishtar episode of the PTF Film Club that we did last week, we had a table together. We were out there pimping our comic Baby Badass, and I also had some material for my comic The Periwinkle Puss. So to anybody who came out to our table to support us, bought some of our swag, thank you so much for coming out. It was a great time, and it's always great to have people appreciate our work. But the real reason that I'm recording this intro is because I actually was able to record some interviews with some really great talent on the floor of the Long Beach Comic Con. So that's basically what this episode is. It's short mini interviews with creators that were at Long Beach Comic Con. And this is just a small taste of the type of people that were there, the type of creators, I should say. And let me tell you, Long Beach is a really fun show. If you're in Southern California and you can't make it to San Diego Comic-Con, it's a really neat alternative. As a matter of fact, I think it's kind of better because it's small. You can meet with the creators, you can chat with them. It's not so crowded, and there's just not the mania on the floor that seems to exist at San Diego. And it's a smaller and, you know, a bit more chill of a show. But anyway, now that I'm done plugging Long Beach Comic Con, sit back, take a listen, and check out some of these comic people who were nice enough to sit with me and chat for a little bit. The list of creators is on the site, and in between interviews, there will be a bit of silence, but they'll pretty much slide into one another seamlessly. All right, that's it. On to the interviews.
Hi, this is Drew Dornfest. I am the creator and writer of Space Case, a brand new indie comic book.
Awesome. And you are?
And I am Hazen Becker. I am a freelance illustrator based in San Diego.
Ah, okay. Yep. And you worked on Space Case as well?
Yes, I'm the illustrator for issue one and two.
Oh, okay. Issue one and two, and you are the
Writer and creator.
Writer.
So
okay,
Hazen did
you.
Everything. He did the pencils and the inks and the colors on issue one, and then issue two he did the pencils, and he's also the letterer. He did on the second issue he did the pencils and colors and letters, and we had an inker we added for the second one.
Oh,
his name's Gene Majora, and he's awesome.
And he's
so
awesome.
It's all very complex. Sorry, yeah. It's like the afternoon of the first day, and I'm already
mind
is boggled.
No worries.
So cool. So tell me a little bit about Space Case. Who would like to? What is the general sort of gist of the book?
Sure. So it's an all ages comic about the first boy to grow up on Mars.
Oh.
And his father is like a super intergalactic hero. Like, he's kind of like a Han Solo or a Flash Gordon.
Okay.
Travels the universe, saving the world from bad guys.
Gotcha.
And one day, while his father's out on a mission, the evil alien nemesis of his father comes and kidnaps his mom.
Okay.
And he thinks he can go and save his mom on his own.
Gotcha. So the dad is off on a mission.
Yeah.
And the son is like, I'm going to go
take care of stuff.
He
grabs a jetpack from the dad's office and just goes and tries to do it by himself.
And how old is the kid at this
point? He's like 8 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he runs into all kinds of evil alien bad guys and robots. And he runs into a robot sidekick who's a robot dragon made of nanotechnology, and his name is Nano.
It was very fun to draw, I have to add.
Yeah, he can transform, he can do all sorts of kung fu, and he can fly around.
That's awesome.
It's crazy. So, yeah, it's like Adventure Time, it's like Rick and Morty, it's like Star Wars for sure.
Yeah,
we're inspired by cartoons and all this big pop culture that everyone else loves.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I was walking past your booth, and the artwork is absolutely beautiful.
Stunning,
I mean, it's
right?
Just,
thank
like,
you.
Gorgeous. Yeah, and that's what sort of like drew me in, and I actually purchased, the first and the second. But what? Obviously, you just said you were inspired by a lot of the other sort of like cartoons out there. But are you guys? Were you always like sci-fi fans, like Buck Rogers, Flash Gordon, sort of thing?
It's kind of hard not to be.
I guess at this point.
Yeah, I mean, definitely both grew up loving Star Wars and grew up like reading comics, and honestly, another huge influence was Calvin and Hobbes. Like,
oh, okay.
Just like loved Calvin and Hobbes. That was like an early touchstone where it's like a kid, he's got this imaginary tiger that he pals around with. So I was like, okay, let's do that, but let's do it in space. Like,
nice.
Let's have it be full of comedy, but full of awesome action that can live up to the way that Star Wars just like has mesmerized audiences.
Cool. So it's comedic as well. It's
absolutely
not just like a straight adventure.
Yeah, it's try to pack in as many jokes as we can. And Hazen's amazing at like, if I tell him I got an idea for a joke, he's like, I got another joke also to add on to there.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. So how did you guys work together? Or how did you meet? Like, how did that?
We actually met through Facebook.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I was applying for, I think,
Boom, right?
Boom Comics on their Facebook page.
Uh-huh.
Drew saw me, and
I was going through there. I found another artist, and that didn't quite work out. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna go through some other artists. And I reached out to Hazen, and I was like, hey, I love your art style. I would love if you could take a look at what I've got, and if that interests you, please, you know, I would love to work with you. And he was like, yeah, sure. He was right out of art school, and he was eager to work on it.
Wait, I want to go back a little bit. How do you apply for a position at Boom on Facebook? Like, how does that work?
It's very weird. I was also curious about that. So I was like, how?
Did they say something? Like, did they, on their social media, like, come and apply?
I went to apply, and they said, just, if you want to apply, go on our Facebook page, post an example of your work and your intro, and we'll get a hold of you if you want.
Okay.
And It's really weird, but that's how it works.
Yeah. So someone else, when I said I'm looking for an artist, they recommended the Boom submissions page, and I just went through all of them, and his just jumped out. I was like, this is amazing.
That's another kind of cool thing about it, is like, even if they don't get back to you, tons of people see your work, and they can also get back to you.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this.
And that's how we found the inker, Gene, for the second issue. I just posted an ad, and I was like, hey, we're looking for an inker, and I
on
got a bunch
Boom
of...
On the Boom site?
No, I just posted a general, like, a bunch of... There's different comics groups, like inkers and pencilers or whatever. And I said, hey, I'm looking for an inker, and I got a bunch of submissions, and Gene lives in the Philippines, and I was like, this work is fantastic. And I said, Hazen, do you like this? He's like, yes, great, reach out to him. And so we brought him aboard. So we all just work over the internet, over Google Drive and Facebook.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow, that's like total remote, like, fantasy internet world.
Yeah, so like, we'd go page by page, you know, I have the script, and then Hazen comes up with the rough pencils, and then I go from there and just go like, oh, this looks great, or this, you know, let's change that, let's tweak this, and we do it all digitally. The whole thing, you do it all digitally, right?
So it sounds like it's like super easy. I mean, are there challenges that way?
There's definitely
so
challenges.
Easy.
Yeah.
No, Hazen is like a superhero. He does incredible work. I'm always just like floored by it. We pass it back and forth, and we take it from there. And if I ever want to make a small tweak because it's digital, it's like really easy for him to go, yeah, no problem, as opposed to if it was on paper, you might have to, like, erase a bunch of stuff.
Oh, wow. That's great. And so as far as, like, Space Case is concerned, because I'm looking at it right now, I'm looking at the banner right now, and I looked at the issues, and it does look a lot like something you would see through Boom or something like that.
Yeah.
Has there been any interest from, like, publishers at all or anything like that?
Not yet, but, you know, we're independent for now. This is actually our first con appearance ever.
Oh,
so,
really? So I hit, sort of an exclusive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nailed it.
And we're launching issue two here too, so it's a fun exclusive. We worked really hard on it, I'd say like the last like 18 months working on issue two, and so it was like, okay, this is gonna be the first week in September. If we can have it done ready for that would be great. And we're also gonna do the LA Comic Con at the end of October.
Nice. Okay,
so we're gonna start getting it out there, and this has been the best. It's been so cool to like reach out to kids and their parents directly and be like, hey, check this out, it's right in front of you. So the reception has been fantastic.
I have to say also, that's one of my favorite parts about working on this, is to see the reaction of children and just, you know, how they eat it up and they love it. And they smile when they see it. You know, we're helping them, like, get into, like,
promote reading,
like
getting into comics. Yeah,
yeah, that's awesome. I mean, that's why I picked it up, because it looks like something, you mentioned Calvin and Hobbes.
Yeah.
Looks like something that my daughter would love. So
absolutely.
I was like, oh, this will be, like,
really
great.
It's not just exclusively for kids. Like, a parent can laugh and enjoy it as much as their kid can.
So can you talk to me a little about bit about your art style? Like, because I mean, it's very colorful. It's very bright. Is this the sort of like cartooning and stuff that you sort of were always like edging towards?
I'm super big into animation.
Okay.
I love Steven Universe, Over the Garden Wall, Adventure Time, and so.
I just discovered Steven Universe.
Isn't it amazing?
It's amazing. I love it so much. It's short.
He's turned me on to a bunch of stuff. I had never seen Gravity Falls. I had barely seen Rick and Morty. And he's like, you got to check that out. I'm like, yeah. Over the Wall, too. I was like,
well, yeah, so how did you write something like this without having sort
of that? Just from my own instinct. And, you know, honestly, it all came about where I was like, I had an idea for a comic, and it was getting too complicated. And I was like, I needed to be, like, I find an artist whose art style I just, like, am absolutely in love with. And whatever they can bring to it, I'm probably going to really like.
Sure.
So it kind of was that easy of just like, I like everything he draws, so if I say like draw a cat, if his version of a cat's gonna be awesome, you
sure
know what I mean? So it's like it was finding him that really brought it to life.
Because for me, it's almost like, so you sort of like created something and it's like running through his filter of like cartooning.
Absolutely.
And then it comes out as something else and it just works.
Yeah, you know, like the first time I saw some of his early sketches, I was like, this reminds me of like Iron Giant, which is not something I was even thinking about, but I was like, that looks, I love that movie, and like that's a perfect ideal.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. And so what are, besides like some of those cartoons, what are some of your direct like sort of inspirations? Do you have cartoonists that or artists that you're sort of like?
I was really big into Scotty Young for a while.
Nice.
I'm really into Andrew McKean right now.
Okay.
Like Hip Hopper series.
Oh, yeah, okay. That one's cool. You turned me out of that one.
And it's interesting because you can almost, I mean, I'm still kind of a young artist.
Sure.
And you can see.
Don't brag about it. That's okay.
You can see developments from like issue 1 to 2. And
totally.
It's exciting to me because then I'm like, oh, I can't wait till we get to 5. I wonder what it's going to look like when we're there.
Yeah, sure. Issue 2 is like next level.
Cool. Oh, no, that's awesome. Well, congratulations on the book. I think it's beautiful. And
thank you.
Are you, so you're looking towards like issue 3? Is this like
ongoing? Yeah, so yeah, it's an ongoing, like each issue is a continuation. That was something we kind of picked up on as we were. And it's something I had. I was like, I would love to continue it, but like, you know, it's hard out there. You got to get people hooked on that first one to then get the second one. Mm. But I think it's been great, especially here where we can go, hey, you can get both of them for a discount price.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'll keep everyone in the loop when the third one's coming out or as it's happening.
Well, it's great. I mean, I think it's beautiful. I loved it. Everyone out there should pick it up if you get a chance. Where can they find you online?
Spacecasecomic.com, and then social media, it's @spacecasecomic.
Okay, but not on the Boom Media. Not yet. Anyway.
No.
Okay.
We're doing it all right. On our own.
We'll get you into Boom. We'll get you into wherever you want to go. I think, I mean, honestly, this looks just as good, if not better, than anything
Thank you so much.
I really like it. But congratulations and congrats on your first show, and thank you for your time.
Hey, thanks
thank
so
you.
Much.
Awesome.
This
cool.
Great. Thanks.
Okay. My name is Awet Mogus.
Okay.
I'm a creator of a graphic novel called Pantheon. Stands for All Gods. It's a mixture of science fiction, mythology, something I like to call pan-futurism.
Okay.
Almost kind of like a desolate future. So all of our culturalisms, they mature and they show. It's a bit of science, nonfiction, and mythology all in one.
Okay, great. And I should say that the voice that listeners are hearing is the voice of an interpreter. Because you are hearing impaired, is that correct?
This is Awet speaking again. And you know what? I'm actually a deaf individual.
Okay.
And I am also an American.
gotcha. So I didn't mean to be insensitive. I just wanted the readers to know that they are hearing the voice of an interpreter. So.
Right, absolutely. Actually, that's very fair. Thank you for doing that.
Okay, great. So Pantheon is your book, and the reason that I noticed it is the artwork is absolutely beautiful when I was walking past. I tend to be a sort of visual comics fan. So can you speak to me a little bit about your influences?
Actually, many influences from different areas, different genres. The comic book itself are all from like the 1980s.
Okay.
Like you mentioned before, kind of a futuristic god illustration.
Okay.
Walter Simmons was one of the great influences for me.
Oh, Walt Simonson, yeah.
George Perez was another one.
Nice.
So that futuristic feel, those artists really were a huge influence on me. And right now, Some more of my influences, they kind of, as it comes through my art, you can see, it just depends on what I'm doing. The backgrounds will differ. I kind of speak through my hands, you know, what comes through my hands and onto the paper. It's, you may be a beautiful woman. It may be, again, it just depends on what I'm feeling and how that flows through my hands.
Sure, absolutely. And so can you please tell me what Pantheon is about, like the general specifics, I get general specifics, the general details of what the graphic novel is about?
It's about a little boy looking for more. Actually, okay, let me get back a little bit. I was a little boy looking for books. I loved books, loved to be in the library. Mythology was a huge thing for me.
Okay.
And, you know, and I noticed that some of the characters in mythology would disappear. They'd be gone from stories, and in my head, they were still alive. So, you know, I read more science fiction growing up, reading more of the futuristic type books, and that kind of resonated with me. So, and I noticed so much more now, it wasn't around so much, so that format I kind of tried to bring on back.
Okay.
And that's how I came up with the idea for Pantheon.
So it has to deal with sort of past mythologies, like old gods, I would say, that sort of thing?
Yeah, but also I gave it a new lifeblood by studying how we can, how a person can live, say, 10 or 50,000 years, 10 to 50,000 years, and the wisdom that they gather and what they might use or what they might do or how that might develop a character, and how whether or not they actually may use their wisdom to better things.
Oh, interesting. So they're immortals, basically, in this book.
Correct, yes. All of them are immortals, especially the last living human himself. He is actually an immortal.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. Another story about that later.
And so this takes place in the future?
Yes, it does. Correct. 100,000 years from now.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. That sounds great. So when you were sitting down to sort of, is this your first comics work?
Yeah, this is my first graphic novel, correct.
Okay, and
I have two more that should be coming out next year, and maybe a third one in 2020.
Great. Oh, wow, that's great. Are they all related to this sort of universe? Are they interconnected?
Yes, correct, it is. They all have some, it's like a trilogy I'm thinking of developing, so it kind of falls along those lines, yeah.
Okay, and so what are the challenges? I mean, independent artists all have challenges in getting their book set up. Like, what did you find to be sort of a challenge to sort of get your book printed, to get your story developed, get it to conventions? What are the sort of things that you found that either inspired you or challenged you?
I think every actually challenging of itself is an inspiration. Those challenges themselves, some type of obstacle, something that, you know, you have to get through and overcome and get past, you know, like kind of like when you get through one door, there's another one to get, you find another one, so you're kind of going through levels, and in that process you have to problem solve along the way. So I try to keep my mind positive, filter out the negativity, you know, and then keep working through this to develop Pantheon.
Sure.
And I think right now the biggest challenge is getting out to people, because people don't know, obviously, about me. So
sure.
Using social media, contacting people, I'm trying to get to the influential people, those people who've been out there for a long time, using their influence, meeting up with even smaller venues, and then also just like this through media with somebody just like you.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you. Is this a... because you had said you read comics in the 80s, and that's where sort of your influence, Walt Simonson, George Perez. Have you been reading, like, all this time comics, or did you take a break and then just decide to start creating your own?
You know, it's always been there in my heart. Mythology is something that's close to me, something I did take a small break when I started drawing. And the reason why is that, you know, I showed a lot of promise, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. It kind of almost the brink of, you know, giving up, but then I didn't, you know. And I kind of had moments where I thought I was going to stop, and I had friends who would tell me why, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's like buying video games sometimes. You might buy a video game and, you know, if you lose, you might give up, but eventually you come back to it. So in that sense, you know, I started, kept going and worked on my comic book. And but, yeah, I just made sure that I wasn't going to stop doing what I was doing.
Well, that's great. I mean, thank you so much for your time. I love the look of the book. It's I actually have to buy it because I was walking past before and I actually didn't purchase it, but I saw it. I thought it was beautiful. It looked interesting and it looks different. So I think anyone out there should definitely look into this. Where can people find you online? Where can they pick up your book?
You can find us on Amazon. It is available.
Oh, great.
Or you can just Google in my name, and that is spelled AWETMOGES, Awetmoges.
Awesome. Well, it looks great. It looks beautiful. I love the John Byrne sort of reference on your table. That's why I stopped, because that used to be one of my favorite art books, The Art of John Byrne. And you've definitely got a lot of those influences in there. So I think it's beautiful stuff, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. You're very welcome. And thank you for taking the time to stop by. And hopefully John Byrne maybe will notice me too.
Well, I don't know if you want that or don't want that, but, you know, we'll see.
I am Emily Felt.
Okay.
I'm the writer.
Gotcha.
Laura West. I'm the artist.
Okay. And the name of the book is?
Olive and the Underworld.
Olive and the Underworld. And what is Olive and the Underworld about? Generally speaking.
Generally speaking.
I know that's like a loaded question, but.
In terms of like bigger themes or story?
Let's go with story first.
Okay.
Okay, so the writer's going to like get all complicated on me. I thought it was a simple question, but okay, go ahead.
There are no simple questions.
Yeah.
So Olive is about an orphan goth girl. She doesn't quite fit in, and she lives in Miss DeLuise's home for unwanted girls. She has a sense of humor that doesn't quite fit in with the other kids. And it's kind of got a Tim Burton feel, like dark but whimsical.
Okay.
But she and her classmates perish in a tragic bus accident and end up going to purgatory. And that's where she kind of is like, oh, this is where I'm a little more comfortable.
Okay.
This is my jam. And that's kind of where we start out.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, that's really, for lack of a better term, kind of dark.
Yeah.
Like people, kids perishing in a bus accident. How do you sort of, I mean, I've looked at the book and I was walking by and I saw it, which is why I wanted to interview you. I'm sort of very attracted to visuals in comics. I mean, it is a visual medium. But how do you sell sort of like the bus crash, accident, killing children thing to people who may not have seen the book or something like that?
Well,
if that's not too complicated a question.
I'll do the visual question. We usually open to that page. We explain what happens and, you know, open to that page just so parents can see if they're buying for, you know, for their child.
Yeah, like you did for me, yeah.
Yeah, just, you know, show you this is as bad as it gets. But we also made a decision to not show, like, blood or anything dramatic like that. It's
sure.
More the moment of impact, and even the moment of impact is more like things flying, but not... I don't know. Not as scary and terrifying, I guess, and not gory at all. And then the transition to the underworld is more gentle, so it doesn't feel scary. It feels unknown, like we don't know what's happening here, but it doesn't feel scary. People, they're more curious than scared.
Yeah.
So curiosity was the focus.
Yeah. Well, as far as the look of the book, I mean, I did say it's gorgeous, and it is really beautiful looking. So that's like not. That's not something that's going to offset people, but so before you had said like broader themes, like what are we talking about there? Because that sounds kind of like, where are we going with this sort of?
Some of the broader themes are what is home, and things like being true to yourself, and sometimes things aren't always what they seem. Sometimes the judgments that we make of people aren't always quite accurate. Oh. And in the beginning of the book, Olive is very much feels like she's in her own world, that she's alone. And throughout, I mean, we've only finished volume one, but we're working on volume two right now. And
sure.
It's going to go on for a little bit, but maybe she wasn't quite as alone as she thought.
Got you.
So those are some of the more overarching themes.
Got you. And so how did this sort of, as the writer of the book, how did this sort of story, you know, evolve in your brain? Because obviously that's kind of like, I always think it's like a stupid question to be like, how'd you get the idea? Like, how did you, but like, what was it about it that sort of like because there is something that sort of moves you forward, right? Like all creative people get like this idea, and then there's one that's like, oh, I want to do this, and then you propel forward. So
I got the germ of the idea was actually I was taking a class and I had these two ideas that I had like really worked on and expounded on, and then we were given kind of just a random assignment. So the professor rolled the dice and then gave us just a word off of that, and mine was goth.
Okay.
And so then we had to bring in a story idea to pitch it, because he's like, a lot of times you're just going to get something and they're like, give us an idea for it.
Sure.
And so I just kind of came up with the idea of what if somebody was happy in purgatory.
Okay.
And of course, I always love having teenage girls tend to be somebody I love writing for.
Sure.
And so I just kind of came up with this very general idea and got really a great reaction to it. And so that's how the germ of the idea started. But in terms of where it goes, I just, I do a lot of daydreaming for it.
Okay, that works.
Or just going on hikes with no music, and I just kind of walk. And so sometimes I do catch myself talking to myself, which is a little bit,
happens.
And then I'm like, ran in public.
It happens to the best of us.
Yeah. Nice. But I feel like just in terms of creative people, at least for me, just like a little bit of boredom, a little bit of staring out the window, just sitting on my porch, looking at nothing, without my phone.
Yeah.
Or even if I'm stumbling and really struggling with an idea, I'll go and have a good happy hour and get a big glass of red wine.
Okay.
Someplace without Wi-Fi.
Sure.
And just have a notebook and just stare and then write stuff down.
So avoid technology like at all costs. Oh,
and
that's
just
great.
Let your mind wander.
That's great.
Just
not enough people do that these days.
It's fun.
So did you know each other before coming up with this idea, or how did you both meet?
It was actually a mutual friend of ours who I believe was in a writing class with you.
That's how we originally met, and then we were in a writing group together. Mm-hmm.
And then I knew her, and she heard that Emily was looking for an artist and knew that I did that. I was interested in comics and kind of connected us. And we both, as soon as we talked about the idea, we hit it off. And I loved the idea of Olive. And
I loved her artwork. I remember looking at her website and going, oh, my God, she's perfect.
This is great. Oh, that's great.
And it worked out really. This has worked out great. Yeah.
So were you a writer as well before? Like you met in a... Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I was. I am an artist full time.
Yeah.
So it's my other job too. So
oh,
my day job.
What do you do as your day job?
My day job, I work in the theme park industry. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, great. Okay. So we're not going to say exactly who. Okay, gotcha. I know all about that. That's totally fine. So tell me a little bit about Olive. What should listeners know about Olive? Like, what is it that makes her an interesting character, other than the fact that she survived a bus crash? Sorry, I keep getting hung up on the bus crash.
Some
people read it, and because it's become so much a part of our pitch, and we know what happens, and that, you know, we kind of know them afterwards, but some people are really like, wow, this happened. That happened, and they get
see people's faces when they're like, when we tell the story, and they're like,
really?
I didn't see that coming. Okay.
Yeah. So you're not the only one. That's not a unique. Yeah.
That's
a lot
so
of people
funny
have
because
that
have you ever read a book called Amulet?
Mm-mm.
Like,
it's a really good book,
but it was a book that I was a little afraid of, like, showing to my daughter, because it starts off with like a car accident. Not to spoil anything, but when speaking to I interviewed the author and I'm kind of friendly with him a while ago. One of the things that he said was like, fairy tales are tragic, and like tragic things happen in fairy tales. That's what people forget, or like stories for children. So, I mean, the bus thing. It works, right?
Yeah.
I mean, sort of in the larger...
And I think there's a lot of... I mean, I think we think of childhood, especially as adults, we look back and it's easy, but it's hard. And there's a lot of things that kids look at and a lot of things that kids struggle with.
Yeah.
And especially now, I think it's really hard sometimes to be a kid that I think they're a lot more... able to process ideas than sometimes we give them credit for.
Sure.
Yeah. But I mean, not to say like, oh, here, read this serial killer novel to like a 4-year-old or anything, but
no, of course.
I do feel like Harry Potter. That's what we kind of always say. If your child is reading Harry Potter, like they'll be fine for this.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of really, like I'm still upset about some of those deaths in Harry Potter.
Yeah. Well, I remember rewatching those with my daughter and being like, this is really dark.
Yeah.
Like, I forgot, like, how dark it was. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Let me go back to the question before about Olive, because I kept harping on the bus crash, and I apologize. Tell me about Olive. What should people know?
I love Olive because I love that she's who she is, and she's proud of who she is. She doesn't try to be something that she's not.
Yeah.
She's like, this is who I am. From when we have a couple flashbacks in there, and from when she's very young, this is who she is, and she stays with it.
Okay.
And at the same time, she is still wanting to find a family and wanting to find that home, but she's not going to compromise herself in order to do that. She's just like, I know somebody's out there that's mine.
Okay.
But she's not going to just, looking at compromise, but like kind of sell out.
Sure.
For it. And not get what she wants.
Sure.
She's going to stick with herself and find that family that loves her for her.
Gotcha.
I love that about her.
Oh, that's really cool. And for you as the artist, like, what was it that drew you to, what did you like about the character, and how did you work through sort of the visual development of her? Because obviously before you came along, there wasn't really like a physical idea.
Right. Let's see. I think Olive was the character that we had the most, Emily had the most idea of, like, strongest idea of what Olive could look like.
Sure.
And so so that was kind of my guideline there. And I looked at a lot of different reference material and things like that to try to find the right look. And actually in the back of Volume 1, there's a lot of the development art. So you can see the iterations that we went through. And so I would send something over. Ooh, that's a little too far. Oh, that's not quite far enough. Or, you know, in that kind of way. And then one of the things that I love about Olive that I find so admirable is that she greets the unknown with curiosity.
Okay.
I think that's so, rather than with, you know, with fear. And so, I have a little reminder on my phone that pops up every day that says curiosity is the antidote to fear. And so it just kind of reminds me, you know, like, just greet the unknown with curiosity rather than fear.
So ignore the killing the cat. Sort of thing. Okay.
No, I got it.
No, it just doesn't kill the cat. So where can people find your book online, or is there a place to purchase it? Or?
I'd say the easiest place is to go to our website.
Okay.
www.oliveintheunderworld.com. So pretty straightforward. We have actual links there. So it's Amazon, it's Gumroad, it's Indie Planet, and so that's both hard copy and digital.
Okay.
But it's really easy because they're just links. So you just click on the link and you go straight to it.
Great. Well, it seems like a really excellent book. I have not had a chance to read it because I'm at the convention at my own booth. But I can't wait to hand it off to my daughter because it looks like something that she's going to love.
Awesome.
So I really appreciate your time. And everyone should check out this book because it is definitely one of those things. I was walking down the, and I was like, wait, no, I want to go look at that.
Nice.
So, you know, congratulations on the book. And I can't wait to, you know, when Volume 2 comes out. So, great.
Thanks. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your time. So your name is?
Ryan. Ryan Burke.
Okay.
And I work on a comic series called Coronary.
Coronary. Okay. And I actually purchased the book yesterday. I didn't get a chance to read it, but I opened it up. It's very beautiful on the inside, so I can at least say visually it's very nice. But you're the writer? Or you're the
Yeah, I'm the writer. I kind of do everything that isn't the visuals.
Sure. Well, I'll get there, but it's still, at least it's a compliment that it's, you know, a very well laid out, beautiful looking book. Mm-hmm. So, so why don't you tell me a little bit like what Coronary is about?
So it's essentially, it's like 50-50. It's, well, the way I pitch it, it's a detective story where plastic surgery becomes free.
Oh, okay.
That's
so like Brazil.
Yeah, kind of like that. Where everyone just gets
that's
whatever.
Everyone says Brazil. Really? So that's what it's. That's sort of the background story.
So it's kind of half like social commentary, half just hard boiled things getting arrested and things blowing up.
Uh huh.
So,
and so
a bit
what?
Of both.
Like, I mean, is that like in the U.S. like plastic surgery becomes free, or just like in the world?
This one's set in England.
Oh, okay.
In London, so. That's where I'm from.
That's where you're from? Yeah, I picked
right
up on the...
Right, you know.
That's great. So, basically, in the UK, all plastic surgery becomes free.
Yeah.
And so, how does that sort of affect things, like, in your society or the larger world that you're... Yeah.
Well, it's kind of an exaggerated... I always feel like it's an exaggerated version of, like, what we already have.
Okay.
It's kind of, like, driven up to, like, 11 or maybe 12.
Sure. So you can spinal tap it.
Yeah. So, it's...
It's
essentially what happens when, say, advertising say you need the perfect body. Like, when everyone has the perfect body, like, what do people turn to after that?
Oh.
And, like, what is... It kind of always brings up the question, like, what is the point? Like, what do you do when you get the thing that you want?
Uh-huh.
And is like, happiness in general about just wanting something and not necessarily having what we already have?
Uh-huh.
If that makes sense.
Wow, that sounds really deep.
Yeah.
That sounds really cool.
But then when it gets too deep, I just throw in an explosion or something.
So there is action.
Yeah.
It's not just like pages and pages of comic book philosophy.
Yeah, it's not just like people rubbing their chins.
Sure, sure. Like having like Kevin Smith like dialogue for pages and pages and pages. Yeah. No, that's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, it sounds really compelling and like a really interesting idea. What sort of like spurred you to that?
I was reading a lot of stuff with, I was reading a lot of old school like dystopian stuff like, Brave New World is the one I really like.
Yeah, that's like one of my favorite books.
I was also kind of just beginning to get into comics. Like I was reading like the classics like Watchmen, Sandman.
Okay, yeah.
Started getting to more modern stuff like Brian K. Vaughan with like Saga and Why the Last Man.
Sure, all the good stuff.
All the good stuff.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Like your meat and potatoes.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And I was like, wow, this is really cool. Like you can actually interrogate a lot of deeper things while also being very approachable.
Sure.
Because, you know, when you're reading like a classic book or something, you're like, oh god, like,
sure. Sure.
It's like 300 pages, like I get it.
Okay.
Whereas I feel that comics are a lot more,
you're a writer, you should promote literacy.
don't read it's bad.
Don't read 300 page books anyway. Continue.
Read a 300 page comic, it's so much easier.
Yeah, exactly. We're heading towards Fahrenheit 9/11. yeah
exactly.
Yeah,
and I feel it's there's a lot less pretense when it comes to comics, where you can just kind of explore things without having to like always be highfalutin.
Sure, sure.
If that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense.
It's cool.
How did you get into comics? Like you said, you recently got into them. Did someone introduce them to you, or?
So it was essentially someone just recommended Watchmen to me, and I was like, all right, I'm in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So Alan Moore is where you started.
Yeah.
Wow, that's quite a high bar to.
All right, okay.
So was everything like a disappointment like after that? Were you like, oh, everything's garbage?
I mean, not really. Like,
no, I know.
Like,
when you
read other stuff, you're like, all right, okay, maybe Alan should have calmed down a little bit sometimes. Like, I'm reading a book in a comic, if that makes sense.
Sure, sure.
It's a little bit wordy from time to time, but like, he does it well. So
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I wanted to kind of strike a balance between being very entertaining and also being a little bit philosophical.
Sure,
a little
sure.
Bit chin-strokey.
No, that's great. And so this is like your actual first convention, right? You
yes.
said. And how are you enjoying
one.
It?
It is crazy. It is a trial by fire, to say the least.
Oh,
and
really?
Like, all right. And I'm like, whoa,
so you feel like you got thrown into the deep end a little?
Definitely.
That's
definitely.
Great.
But I talked to other creators, and they're like, yeah, nah, this is not the deep end.
Sure. Yeah, this is not. Yeah,
this is
yeah.
not the deep end yet.
Yeah, so. Not yet. So you've got a lot going, looking forward to other larger conventions or that sort
definitely.
Of thing. That's great.
It's fun to meet and just talk to people in general about it.
Sure.
It's nice to have the validation of not being like, oh, I'm just writing this at home on my computer. Like, it's actually out there, and people are interacting with it.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So your artist isn't here. How did you find your artist?
This is probably going to age me quite a bit, but I found him on DeviantArt.
DeviantArt.
4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
So,
okay.
I just kind of pitched him the project because I had the whole script completed.
Yeah.
It's completed all the way up to 12 issues.
Mm.
I was like, all right, like I need something to go on because scripts don't really look that attractive.
Sure, sure. Absolutely.
So I just kind of commissioned him for 5 pages, like the first 5. And then we went pitching to publishers, and we weren't really getting anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, because I was essentially trying to pitch Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
It was like, this massive arc, it's going to be great.
Again,
like,
you were jumping into the deep end.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I don't know, you learn a lot jumping in the deep end.
Sure, sure.
You learn to swim quite quickly.
Yeah.
So, I met up with him, and then he was doing everything from the layouts all the way to the lettering.
Yeah, that's
just
a lot of work.
Himself.
Yeah.
And I started kickstarting some of the issues.
Oh, okay.
And we did the first one. It went really well. And then he was kind of saying, like, yeah, I can do this, but, like, it's going to be a lot of work. It's going to take me, like, 6 months like, on
my
own.
Yeah, yeah.
So he had his friend Damien, who's Damien Penalba. He's a really great colorist.
Okay.
So, he was like, I work with him. I know him. Like, it's going to be solid. Like, trust me.
Nice.
Like, all right, cool. Come on in. So then I've been building up from there. Really.
Nice.
Oh, that's cool. Great.
And where can people find your book, like online or to buy it? Or
It's on my Twitter at @RyanBurkeWriter. It's also on Amazon and Comixology as well.
Oh, so you got all the bases covered. Smart.
We got all the bases covered.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, cool. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
It was nice
for
to chat to you.
Yeah, it's great chatting. And like I said, I picked up the first issue, and as soon as I get a chance to read it, I'm going to let you know. I'm sure I'll love it because it looks great.
Good.
So,
thanks.
Yeah, we've been sitting across the row from each other, and I find myself like staring at your display. I'm like, it's very classy. You've got like a chessboard, and so there's something intelligent going on. Maybe it's just because you're British. I don't know.
I exude that. You know.
Cool. Well, everyone, look for Coronary. No worries. It looks like a great book. He's got a great setup. Check him out. Are you going to another convention soon, or is this kind of like?
I think I've got LA Comic Con booked for the next one.
Nice.
Next month.
Awesome. Cool. Well, check you out at LA Comic Con.
No worries.
Cool. Thanks for your time.
Cheers. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Awesome. Great meeting you. Cool.
I'm Joe Renoia, and my company is Vanth Creative. We have a couple of independent comic books that we're doing.
Cool. Cool. And your name is?
My name is Haley Suits. I'm a digital illustrator, and I do some work with him. My next project is a mermaid booklet.
Oh, wow. That sounds great. Cool. So what are some of the books that you actually have here at the show? Because the one that you gave me yesterday, it sounds like we're shutting down. But so we're getting this in at the end. But it sounds like the first book that you gave me was Shy. So is that like your main title or is that?
It's the main title so far.
Okay.
We're three issues in.
Okay.
And Shy is a story about friendship and sisterhood in a world of superheroes.
That sounds great.
Yep. So we have a couple of superheroes. One lives in the shadows, doesn't want to be a hero. The other lives in the spotlight, wants to be a rock star, but makes all the wrong choices. So in the beginning, they're on the wrong side of things, and they're actually kind of in a fight. And we have to see if the differences between the two of them will bring out the best in each other or make them enemies.
Oh, interesting. And this is sort of a... This is a book with a female protagonist.
Correct.
Two female protagonists.
Right.
Correct?
Sort of a 1A and 1B, but Shy is the main character.
Gotcha.
It really does follow her journey.
Gotcha. And sort of asking a stupid sort of sexist question. You being a male, what sort of inspired you to make a book about with two female protagonists?
Interesting. It's a valid question. I think it's a very legitimate question.
Sure.
So it started a couple of many, I guess, 112 years ago. I was actually in an MFA playwriting program. And
okay.
One of the things that a lot of my friends, especially you know, female actors, would say is we don't have any parts.
Okay.
We don't have any female-driven leads. And I started writing female protagonists then for my friends to give them an opportunity to perform in lead roles.
Okay.
And then it just transitioned into my, you know, screenplays that I was writing at the time, and then into comic books.
Yeah.
It was really about targeting female-driven stories, strong protagonists that were women, and also female readers, which I think was a really kind of underserved portion of our comic book community.
Sure, sure. And so let me ask another stupid question. As a male, how hard is it for you to sort of get into a genuine headspace like that or write genuine sort of like dialogue or stories about female characters?
I think the first thing that I do, and that's actually an awesome question, and it's something that's gone back and forth with male creators of female-driven pieces,
is
there's a lot of criticism there sometimes.
Okay.
But I always approach a character as a character that sort of is wired a certain way.
Sure.
And so I don't really think about how a woman would react in a situation. It's how would someone wired like this, with these personality traits, react a certain way? Shy is going to react very differently than Roxy to the same set of circumstances.
Okay.
So you look at it as far as a genuine reaction to how that character or that person would react to it.
Sure.
And then there's twinges of, or like little parts of, like male-female behavior that you add later.
Gotcha.
But really, it's about what's that person who's wired like this going to react in this situation like, and try to be truthful to that.
Okay, that sounds awesome. And sorry, let me ask you about your role in the company, because you said you were an artist as well. What sort of things are you working on for? It's Vanth Creative, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
So occasionally, he includes inserts in his comic books, and one of my pieces is an insert.
Nice.
So he likes to take largely female artists, sometimes male artists, and get them to draw his characters in their styles, and that's how we contribute. And he kind of does it as a, hey, these are my friends, they're artists, I want to get their names out there as well.
Sure, absolutely. Great. That's cool. Like, and so let me ask you a little bit more about Shy. You've got three issues in. What sort of thing should readers sort of expect from the book? Like, I mean, you've kind of gone from, you've nailed the basic plot, but like, you're three issues in. I'm assuming it's an ongoing thing.
Correct.
What can somebody, like what age group are we aiming towards, and what can people expect?
We really started out targeting female readers 18 to 32, in that 34 range.
Sure.
So trying to do a sort of character-driven piece with a strong story to tell.
Sure.
And that's kind of where we are right now. Issue three has us at sort of a turning point for one of the characters, and then we're going to see in issue four how that affects the relationship between the two female superheroes.
Okay, cool. Cool. And how often does Shy come out, generally speaking?
About one a year.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It's an indie book, so we're on that schedule.
I mean, I think that's great. And, you know, for a lot of people, like indie books, I mean, perfection takes time. And, you know, it's like, it costs money to make these things.
For sure.
You know? So what are some of the things that, you know, beyond your MFA writing program, is that correct? Did I hear that correctly?
Yes.
Sorry, I'm like keeping an eye on like, and there's people like talking.
I know,
so
they're going to yell at us in a
sometimes
minute.
In an interview I sound senile because I'm like, why doesn't that guy remember what was just said 5 seconds?
it's okay.
But I guess generally speaking, where do you see the book sort of going? Is this like an idea like for a sort of like TV show or other media that you want to develop it into? Or
if we're playing the long game, then yeah. Then ultimately you want to try to position it to the point where other people, especially moneyed interests, would be interested in picking it up.
Sure.
Maybe optioning it or something like that. But ultimately, I just want to get to issue eight. Like it's an eight-issue arc.
Oh, okay.
I just want to get to issue eight.
You know, have it all written out and stuff?
Yes, it's all written. The script is done. The story's been shopped and is pretty solid as it is. But we really want to just finish this arc.
Gotcha. you look tired. You're at the end of the con. You're like, let's just get to it. So you have it all written out and stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's scripted. And granted, as time changes over the course of a year or two, there's tweaks and there's adjustments that need to be made. But yeah, the story through the first arc is done, and it's outlined into even beyond that.
Cool.
But let's get through eight. You know,
absolutely.
Let's get to 1 through 8.
Absolutely. And who's your artist? Because are they here? Or
he's actually in El Salvador. His name is J.C. Grande.
Okay.
And he's
That's an awesome name,
I know
J.
it is. It's
Grande.
An outstanding name.
Yeah.
And he is he's actually
Grande.
In El Salvador doing like a show or something right now. So he couldn't be at this con. But he's been really great to work with.
Oh, that's
Does
cool.
everything himself.
Really?
Yeah, I know. So he pencils, inks, colors, does the lettering and all that.
Fantastic.
He's like a dynamo.
Oh, that's awesome. So let me ask you about this mermaid book. What is it coming up with the mermaid book?
Because right.
I don't want to ignore you. I feel like I'm shutting you out.
No, you're perfectly fine. So what I kind of drive my art by is character design and development. And I like to include a lot of science in that. And I've noticed with a lot of mermaids, when they come out with them, they all look about the same.
Sure.
So what I've kind of started with this mermaid booklet is scientifically like driven mermaids. So they're different creatures as opposed to just, you know, the fishtail.
Sure.
So I've got one right now that's called the Medusa, and she's a jellyfish, and she's got these tendrils.
Yeah.
And you can see she's glowing like a jellyfish actually would in the ocean.
Sure.
And she's semi-transparent. And
oh, wow. That sounds awesome.
So, and then my major one right now is the tentacle mermaids, like where they have actual tentacles with the suckers, and they're not just like these long strands of like wobbly wooshiness.
Oh, this sounds awesome.
So next is going to be the anglerfish, and she's going to be made for the deep ocean, and she's not just going to be like a pretty face.
Gotcha. And so you're going to do a whole book of like these drawings and designs?
Absolutely.
When do you think you're going to have it done by and like available by?
Paintings take a while.
Sure, sure.
Probably at least a year from now.
Do you have them like available as prints at all? Like where people can get them?
Absolutely.
Where can they find them?
They can find them at hsuitsproductions.com.
Sorry, what was that again?
hsuitsproductions.com.
Okay, great. And where can people find Shy?
Shy can be found on shycomic.com.
Oh, that's great.
And you can
that
link
works.
To our store. Yeah, I know. It's pretty
it
easy.
Totally works.
You can link to our stores there.
Cool. And Twitter, Instagram, like that sort of thing as well?
Or? We do mostly Facebook, but there is a Twitter and Instagram as well.
Gotcha. Yeah, social media
I'm
is
an
a
old
hassle.
Fuddy-duddy, so I've got to get a little more into social media.
Dude,
but
there's only so much time in the day.
You know, seriously. But yeah. Facebook is pretty active.
So wait, do you have other books as well besides Shy? Or
I
is
do.
It? Oh, okay.
So coming soon, in October, we're going to launch at LA Comic Con.
Nice.
What used to be Stan Lee's, and I don't even know what they're calling it anymore.
Yeah.
But is High School Defense Force. So this one is positioned a little bit differently. It's kind of like Saved by the Bell meets Gundam. And it's it's high school kids living in a world where aliens invade the Earth once a day, every day, and have so for 100 years. And so these kids grow up in a world where they literally go to math class, and it's like, okay, now we have to go to history class, and okay, now we have to fight the aliens, and now we go to lunch. And that's sort of the life they live.
Wow.
And in the meantime, they go through their typical high school rom-com nonsense.
That sounds like an awesome idea, I have to say. Sorry, what's it called again?
It's called High School Defense Force.
High school. Even the name is like so like Japanese, like
right.
anime.
And
that's
it
fantastic.
That is sort of the influence, and cool. And it's drawn that way. And we're doing the same model where we're contracting other artists that I like, friends of mine in the industry, to do companion pieces that'll be seen in those that issue as well.
Oh, that's cool. And so you're saying that might be ready for LA Comic Con?
Yeah, we're looking at a Halloween launch, so I think LA Comic Con's right around that time.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's definitely right. That's why I can't go, because I got family stuff to take care
right,
of.
Right, exactly.
I got a daughter and family who loves Halloween, and that's why I will not be there.
Priorities, my
every
friend.
Year.
Priorities.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much for your time. Where are people going to be able to find High School Defense Force when it comes out?
It'll be on the same website. You'll link from there. It's still the Shy Comic one.
Okay.
And that probably will be our main website for a while.
Okay.
Eventually we'll get to more of the company branding, but for right now, Shy Comic
sure,
will
sure,
do.
Absolutely. Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you taking time. Oh, they're shutting us down.
I know.
Here
we
go.
They want us to get out of here.
I got you just in time.
Christian,
well,
thank you
so
much.
Thank you so much for your time. It's awesome. Awesome talking to you. Thank you so much for chatting
with
me.
Thank you so much.
And cool. Thank you so much.
All right, that was it. Those were the interviews I did at Long Beach Comic Con. Thanks again to anyone who sat down with me and took some time to chat. I really appreciated it. It was really nice meeting everyone. And I have to say, I was really impressed with all of these books. Everyone that I spoke to had some really good stuff. So be sure to check out their individual sites, URLs, social media, to find out where you can find some of these amazing books. In the meantime, as always, check us out on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, all that great stuff. You can email us at ptf@parttimefanboy.com, and we will be back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Part-time. Part-time fanboy.